Have we the right colors? Yes. Welcome back to the second half of our program. And this is where I get my own back on the Nolan show, Kathy.
Oh.
If you don't say, I won't say how long we've known each other, and then we'll both be safe. But
it's a deal, but can I just say he is older than me? He is.
But Kathy, tell us a bit about yourself, first of all, and your journey into this field.
Well, it's interesting. I would say my journey actually began in the family that I was born into. And it was a family that was called, I learned later, it was called dysfunctional, which meant that it didn't work. And that was because my father was an alcoholic, domestic violence, and all sorts of things happening. And that all, I believe, influenced me in the work. But I was 8 years of age when I gave my life to Christ. And it's been amazing looking back on my life, the ups and the downs and the lows. And I have to work with children and young people. And I'm amazed at what God has done in my life and what God can do in any life that's truly given to him.
Okay, that's a good answer. And you now work for the big house, or represent the big house
now. Represent. Tax people in represent.
Represent the big house. Now, that would mean a whole lot of things to a whole lot of people, but tell us about the big house.
Well, the big house does have that information down at the back there. Big House is an organisation that was set up with the vision of eventually having a big house. Recognising there's a need to train youth leaders and children's workers on the issues like self-harm, suicide prevention, all these things that we don't like to talk about. The big house is to be a place, and is a place. It's not existing yet, but the big house offers training. We take part in New Horizon, Autumn Soul, Presbyterian Church events, and we go and provide a listening space for young people. So if young people in your congregations, if they need to talk to a professional, they can come to the big house and receive professional counselling, because we have Christians who are professional counsellors with expertise with children and young people volunteering with us. So the big house itself is still the vision, but it's amazing. It is, as far as I know, the only Christian-based youth organisation that does what we do, and we are mainly volunteers. But again, it's lovely to be able to bring something in to an organisation that is unapologetically Christian and offer help from the Christian perspective, and allowing young people in the church, when they're having difficulties, letting them know they can talk about them to someone who understands the God bit of it, which sometimes can be hard.
Okay, so you've told us a wee bit about your early childhood and your journey there. In the middle of all that, you were also a missionary. So how did you weave all that into that early experience and then through into your existing work?
It's interesting. The last time I stood on this stage, and I think it was a bit higher, it was a missionary evening of the General Assembly, and I had been out in Jamaica in Pringle Home for Children, where I was a missionary at that point for several years. I went to Jamaica knowing that God wanted me to go there. If I'm honest, I hadn't thought too much about the loneliness, the challenges of being the only white person for miles around. I believed God had called me. But when I went to Jamaica and were with the children in the Pringle home that I worked in, so many of them had lost, my mum died when I was 13, so many of them had been through what I'd been through. And I actually realised that the best thing I could do for those children was to love them and to care for them. And while we got the basics of feeding them and water and all those things right, but there's an emotional side of it. And we, certainly in my time in Jamaica, we sought to help the whole child, the whole person of the child. I do not believe that I could have worked in Jamaica and gone out at 20. And I think I still hold the record for being the youngest missionary to go out, if you like, full time at that time. I could not have done that if God had not allowed me the experiences. I think the important thing is, it's not that I have everything sussed by any means, Lindsay. I have not things sussed, but I've learnt that by asking God to be with me and help me, he certainly does that and does not let me down. And therefore, I sit here and I say to my brothers and sisters, and those of you who are here, there is hope. There is hope.
Okay, now you have to be careful with the answer to the next one.
Okay.
Who's the most interesting person you've ever sat on the sofa with?
Well, Lindsay, before I answer that, I have to say, to be on this platform with the legend that is Lindsay Conway, I mean, no matter what I say, there's no way it is equal to this. I have to say that. I actually had been on the city, and it was a proper city, on several occasions, but most recently with Phil and Fern on This Morning. So that is something I can maybe put on a CV sometime.
Well, you'll have to tell them about me then, and that'll complete the circle.
About yourself?
No, about being on the circle.
Oh, sorry. See?
And by the way, it was Harry Orr that lowered the stage, not me. So
this stage can be rolled up and down?
No, it's permanently low now.
See, I thought it changed something.
It comes with the old age. Mm-hmm. Cathy, thanks for that insight. And now it's over to you. And we look forward to listening to what you have to say. Not only about the subject of self-injury, but how it applies to the church. Thank you, Cathy. Thank you, everyone.
I'm not sure what situation has been the most frightening up here with your man or being here for the General Assembly. I have to take a drink of water. And hopefully the little button will work. I'm taking the watch off in case I go over time, just so we can watch the time. Self-harm is not an easy topic. If it's not coming up, just tell me, because I don't want to turn around. Self-harm, sometimes called self-injury, it can be used to describe a wide range of things. Self-harm is not just a 21st century activity. Self-harm is something that has gone on for years. Perhaps it wasn't acknowledged, but certainly self-harm happens in our church families. Churches are not immune from self-harm. Self-harm can be secretive behaviour. It can go on for a long time without being discovered. It used to be we were told 1 in 15 young people self-harmed. Then we were told 1 in 10. And some of you might have seen the information on the television and radio of a survey carried out this year, in this country of ours, where it actually said 1 in 10 of our young people here and now were self-harming. So we can't pretend it's not there. If you were to appear at an accident and emergency hospital across the country, I'm not going to make comments about how long you might have to wait, but every accident emergency is part of the Department of Health project to try and deal with this issue, respond to this issue. They hold what's called a self-harm register. So eventually we will have a better idea of how many self-harm situations people, young people, older people who have self-harmed are ending up in our casualties. So it is something that is being recognised. But just watch my wee friend here for a minute, and hopefully technology will work.
I'm no different from anyone else. But sometimes I feel different. So bad inside that I cut myself. But then people notice my scars. And that I'm getting quieter and quieter. So they slag me off. Laugh at me. And that makes me feel worse. Because it hurts more when they treat me like that. But it doesn't have to be that way. See me. I'm a person. Just like you.
It's part of the Scottish Government's campaign to break down some of the stigma around depression, mental health and self-harming. See me, I'm a person. See me, I'm a person. Let's look at some facts or myths. If it was a smaller group, I'd ask you this question directly. Is it a fact that if you self-harm, you're mad or bad if you do that or sad? What do you think? Are you mad, bad or sad if you self-harm? Some people might, okay. No, I think that's a myth. If you self-harm, you want to kill yourself. Is that a myth or is that a fact? Not so easy for that one. The experts, and I'm not an expert, but the experts tell us that if someone consistently self-harms, then yes, they're going to be a greater risk of suicide, but it doesn't always come together. Females self-harm more than males. What do you think about that? Again, not so sure, but yes, certainly the figures we have. Females are self-harming. Children in care, and I'm sure in all of our churches, or most of the churches, even in our presbyteries, there will be children who are looked after children. A high rate of children who are in care, being looked after, foster care, residential care, will self-harm. And I wish I could get inside your brains. I wish you could see inside everybody's brain. Because this next one, it's a selfish behaviour, a fact or a myth. If I could see inside your head, there would probably be some of you would be saying, it's selfish of them to do that. I've had that said to me. And that's because sometimes if we don't understand something and we're going to fear about an issue, it's easier to pretend it's not there. It's not necessarily a selfish behaviour. What does it look like? Oops, here, I've gone too fast now. Self-harm can involve cutting, scratching, banging your own body, scalding, burning yourself, breaking bones, hair pulling, or taking toxic objects or substances. She was 8 years of age. She asked the question of her mummy and asked the question of her auntie, if I fall down the stairs and hurt myself, will I have to go to school? She was told, no, if you're hurt and you're not well, we'll have to take you to the doctor and, you know, you won't be able to go to school if you broke your leg. Inside 3 days, that eight-year-old had thrown themselves down the stairs. And when it was looked into, now thank goodness they didn't break anything, when it was looked into, they were being bullied at school. Now, I was the auntie, and I never picked it up. Her mum is a mental health nurse, never picked it up. But my eight-year-old niece, did she understand what it meant to be self-harming? Did she know that she was self-harming? I don't know that she understood it in her head. But for her, she didn't want to be at school because of what was happening. The bullying can happen in our churches, in our youth organisations, not just in the schools. Who self-harms? Well, have that up, because really, anybody. Doesn't matter whether you go to a big church, a wee church, a rural church, a city church. It doesn't matter whether you've got money or not money. It doesn't matter what colour, or class or creed you are. You and me could self-harm. In fact, I did self-harm. I made reference to the family that I grew up in. I love my family. We're a big family and they're all over the UK at the minute. But that family, that nucleus of the family when I was a little girl growing up in the big, big village of Ballymuir, which I know you all know and have heard of it, I took to self-harming probably from about 10 or 11 because it was a way that I had some control. And we're going to look in a wee minute about, you know, more of the reasons why young people self-harm. But I'm standing here today as someone who self-harmed. The thing I loved doing was taking scissors and putting holes. The thing I loved doing was scratching at cuts. Nobody would have thought. And in a way, when I was a young girl becoming a teenager, self-harm wasn't on the agenda. Not that I'm as old as Lindsay, as long as you remember that. There can be this, I just realised I've got it up there. Why? Just answers. I've given you a wee little insight, if you like, to why I believe I self-harmed. But I don't think there's any one thing you can hang up and say, that young person's self-harming because of X. Often, it's a lot of things together. So, in your Sunday school, you have a young person that maybe has lost a grandparent or lost a parent. Or even, in your congregation, death by suspected suicide. And a young person connected, even a wee one connected to that family, they might feel in the midst of the anger about the suicide and the confusion, they might feel that they're being left out. They might not feel very secure as a person anyway. Their friends might tell them they're ugly. All sorts of things. They might be called a freak. And all those things together can answer part of the why. But if we really knew why, couldn't we fix it? If we really knew why, we could fix it. But there's no one size fits all when it comes to this. Again, take yourself back to your youth group, your Sunday school, whatever it is you're involved in your church. Any young people in your church or youth group that Sunday school don't bother with much with the others? Some children are quiet. I was a quiet child, as you would appreciate. Very quiet, never talked to anybody. A child is feeling isolated. School pressures. I've told you about my niece Jenny. May I say she's grown up, happily married with two lovely children, and just back from a trip to see Mickey Mouse. So she has been okay. She got support and help. I don't know if any of you or many of you are teachers, but sometimes we can have what we call clusters of self-harming. People can copy each other. And I certainly know in my day job within the school system that there have been times when, especially all girls' schools, when it's become the in thing, maybe to cut with a scissor or something like that. It's become, they're all doing it. And then, of course, do we now have self-harm? Has it become a disease? But often it is because they're copying each other. But to me, if someone copies someone else's behaviour, or if someone is doing it because their best friend is doing it, cutting themselves, burning themselves, bumping into things, there's something not right to start with. I do not accept that self-harm is something that the children and young people do because they want attention. You could probably argue that bit with me, because I go back to, if someone wants attention, if there's something going on, I probably want attention in the Girls' Brigade and the CE and Sunday school, and I probably got a lot of attention. But I wanted attention. They didn't know I was self-harming, by the way, but I needed attention because I needed to know that somebody cared about me in the midst of all that was happening in my family. Young people tell me that it's stuff. Stuff makes them hurt themselves. Stuff causes them to cut. Stuff causes them to bump into things. Stuff causes them, as not too far from this building, a five-year-old child putting a scarf around his neck and trying to harm himself using part of the banister. That happens. That is happening. So we can't close our eyes and pretend it's not happening. That is happening, and that has happened not far from here. Did that young 5-6-year-old know what they were doing? I don't know. I don't know if they're psychologically capable or whatever, but they did it. We've got to be so careful, brothers and sisters, in how we live our lives, whether it be self-harm that we're dealing with or whatever, because the children and young people look to us. We are their models. Some of you may well know about this next bit. I'm not going to go through every slide, because you will get this online, I believe. You've maybe heard it said about how physically cutting actually can make you feel good because of the endorphins. The hormones actually are physically released so you can feel better. Your body physically can be feeling better. So for me, part of it was I felt better that the hormones being released. For the young people, this is sometimes what they'll tell you. I feel that the hurt's getting out. You'll sometimes hear, I don't know how to release my feelings. And this is so sad, but I've heard it. I've heard it many times. I felt dead inside. Self-harming brought me back to life. Not made-up comments, not imagined by Kathy Bell, but things said by young people that I come across. Fact. Are you scary? Will young people approach you? Do you give out the message of don't come near me with any of your problems? Do we give out the message, if you want to talk theology, we'll talk theology? What are we giving out? What message are we giving out by our actions? Earlier on, there was facts from NSPCC, from PSNI, Big House up on the screen. And the thing is, across all those organisations, young people will tell us they're frightened to talk about self-harm and other issues. Why? They're frightened of how you're going to react. And how do you react? How might we react? I love some of these answers. Stop it. You're only looking for attention. Or as you saw in the wee video, you're a freak, you're psycho. Maybe you won't say those things, but I've heard sometimes older people, even friendship groups, say that to their peers. I hope none of us would actually say it, but I don't know. Maybe we would say to a young person, look, you know, you've got to believe in God more. You've got to pull your socks up when it comes to your praying. You've got to trust God more. I am very, very privileged today, because one of the reasons I'm here is that in my teenage years, when we moved home to the town of Antrim, and I went to my home church, First Antrim at the time, there was a youth leader there who cared about me. And just in the midst of cutting, by now my mum had died, my father had remarried, it was a mixed marriage. I had also been subjected to sexual abuse over a period of time. There was a youth leader used to meet me during the week, and we'd maybe go for a walk, or we'd sit in her car and she would knit, and I would tell her all my problems. And I could not believe, though I was a Christian, I found it so hard to believe that God could really care for me. I remember, I hadn't told anybody about what was happening to me, but I felt nobody could possibly care. And her reaction one particular night when I was going through this, she looked at me, she put the knitting down, and she says, "Kathy, I care about you a lot, but God cares even more." It's like a light come on. Why? Because that individual, by spending time with me and listening to me going over and over and over, something clicked that if this person says they love me and care for me, and I know they do because they spend time with me, then maybe, just maybe, God can even love me more. And that was another turning point in my Christian faith, I believe. Because it was not long after that that I very much said to God, "God, if you want me to go to the ends of the earth, I'll go for you." Jamaica's maybe not quite the ends of the earth, but that's where he took me at that stage. Young people tell us, "I used to cut myself so I could feel pain. It let me know it was real. I wasn't dreaming." And this is very sad. This comment that I'm going to give was made by a young person who was very involved in their whole youth scene, their whole church scene. No one, I believe, at that time knew they were self-harming. This is what they said. "I needed to harm, to punish myself for being what I believed then to be a terrible person and to clear the fog in my head. As soon as I did something, I'd feel in control, calm, and as though a reset button had been pressed in my head." If you remember nothing else today, check how you react if a young person tells you something that's difficult for you to hear. I wasn't born yesterday. I didn't come up the lagging in a bubble. And therefore, it's important to acknowledge that dealing with something like this, it can be fearful for us as adults, as leaders in our churches. It can be scary. And if we're frightened of something, it's human nature. You try not to deal with it. But the fact you're here today, I believe there's going to be some children and young people's lives will be different because you'll have been here today and you'll have listened to what God had to say to you and you will take it away. I came in there at the end of Lee's session, and when someone in the audience asked a question, and they were obviously from education, and while we talk about bullying happening in school, as has rightly been said, bullying happens everywhere, even in our churches, and now we have more online bullying and social media. But this again is a comment that is quoted many times in different settings. At school, my self-harm, I want to change that. At church, my self-harm was treated very badly. It was treated as a piece of gossip throughout the leaders, and the minister asked me to leave as a result, saying I was a lovely person, but he couldn't have me in a school. That's actually from a school setting. But I know of young people that maybe haven't been told we ought not to be here, but who have not been encouraged to stay in their church. That's a fact. That's not the God I know. Calm, immediate response. Can you do that? Remember, the reaction you give if they disclose can influence whether they seek help or whether they put it back down again. It really is hard to listen to a young person or anybody, a colleague, a fellow leader. It's hard to listen to them telling a story if they're telling you things aren't right, if they're telling you they're feeling like cutting themselves. Today is not the place to give you alternatives, to tell you the sort of things, to share with you things you could be doing if you know a young person's self-harming. But these are little techniques that we sometimes use with a young person, and also with older folk who are self-harming. Today's not the day to go into it, but something very simple. If you have a young person and they tell you that they're prone to cutting themselves, and maybe they won't go to the doctor at that stage, whatever, but you know, you could say to them, "Look, put an elastic band." And when you feel that way, flick, because it'll give you a wee bit of pain. And that might help take them away from the thoughts of self-harming. The 5-minute rule. I think this is good for all of us, not just someone who's going to self-harm. You feel like doing that to yourself now? Wait 5 minutes. Then maybe wait another 5 minutes. And young people have told me that when they've reached a stage where they're able to do that, it has helped them greatly. Can someone who self-harms be cured? I don't self-harm anymore, but it's been a process. We can help our young people through their distraction techniques. Some young people will completely stop. Some people, young people will stop and never self-harm again because they've been helped, they've been listened to, they've been treated with respect, and they've learned new ways of coping. So say, I'm not here and don't have the time to go through all that. Youth leaders, ministers, you're part of the picture. You're part of the solution, I believe. What can you do? Have you ever said that any time? I wonder, help, what can I do? I often, even in my day jobs, cry a silent help. Pray a silent prayer to God and ask him to help me. I always feel most of my life like the swan. Out here, everything's wonderful. But down below, boy, am I paddling and paddling. Simply, what can you do? Do you know? Stop. Do you know your young people? Do you know the people in your Sunday school class, your youth group, your GB, your BB, your scouts, your guides? Does somebody in the group know their young people? So stop. Look, open your eyes. Has behaviour changed? And you know something I've learned throughout my life, that it's often people within the church community that can pick things up. Because you're seeing the youngster and some of the organisations, you're speaking with them and there's closeness and you can pick up something's wrong. But has the behaviour changed? Now, if you don't know there's a reason, if there's been a bereavement or somebody hurt in the family or somebody's sick, behaviour could change then. But if there's no obvious reason, look, ask yourself, has the behaviour changed? And begin to maybe open your mind. It used to be people didn't believe sexual abuse happened in our churches. Yet look at us now. This fantastic conference, taking care, the church showing the way and the church trying to be a safe place for our children and young people. We're being informed and educated. So self-harm, to be here and hearing, that's a good thing. What is the word on the street? I love that. What is the word on the street? And ladies, the toilets are a great place to hear what the word on the street is. At different organisations, and I've happened to be in the bathroom at the same time. I don't know if they know I'm there, but I hear lots of things then. I'm not sure if it's the same in the men's toilets, but, you know, or if the boys are in an activity and listen. I, you know, had young people in my day job is working within schools across the country in terms of the school counselling. And I know there are young people in school who bring their friend to see the school counsellor because they're worried about their friend, or they'll tell the form teacher or the principal or somebody, Miss Sir, so-and-so did something they told me they were. And by listening to the word in the street, you can begin to help and do something. And equally, friends, the word in the street might be, don't tell them anything. Don't go near them. They don't understand. We don't want that. I don't think we want that. Is there hope? Let's go back to that. It's quite simple what I've put up there. Practically care. Keep safe. Remember Jesus. If Jesus is who he said he was and he died and he rose again, then surely he is interested in these young people. He's interested in us and he wants us to be his hands and his feet. Surely he does. Practically care. I once was asked at a seminar, in fact it was New Horizons, someone said afterwards, the talk, they said, you know, if I have a young person and they're cutting and they're bleeding badly, what do I do? Is it self-harm? That's not the time to say it's a self-harm. If they need medical attention, they need medical attention, which is why we've all our safeguarding forms, so that you can need be take a youngster to get medical treatment. So sometimes you need a practical response you need to have. They're in front of you and there's something wrong with them. They've hurt themselves. It's a practical response. Where do we go from here? all I can do today or this morning is give you wee insights, and this is going to be on, say, on the PCI website. And maybe you can go away and you can look at things differently. There's loads of resources. Have any of you ever heard of Flourish? Anybody in the congregation heard of Flourish as an organisation? See, a couple of you. Flourish is an has been set up with all the churches in this country of ours, all the churches. The Public Health Agency has provided funding, an organisation called Lighthouse. Training has been developed, which hopefully will probably be something like training the trainers. But through that system, your church, your presbytery, as well as during the training, there are organisations that have been signed up by Public Health Agency, Lighthouse being one of them, where they will come and they will do training with your group, with your presbytery, youth group, whatever. There's resources out there where the government of this country has put money into helping the churches. I think that's wonderful. You know, I know it's early days for Flourish, but keep your ears, listen, and don't be frightened to say to your minister, maybe we need to organise something as a group, or in the District Girls Brigade, or the Presbytery Youth. There's loads of resources up there. You'll get them, loads and loads and loads of them. I mentioned the Big House briefly. We do have a listening space. We have young people coming to the Big House. We encourage them to come with the youth leader, minister, older brother, sister, a parent. And for me, the beauty of the counselling in the Big House, and there's only so much we can do because there's people are volunteers. The beauty for me is that youth leaders, for example, have been going with the young people to get counselling. Why? Because the young person walks out of the counselling room, whether it's in school or somewhere else in the church, they don't have the counsellor, but they have you as a youth leader or the leader of the organisation. So that's one thing. Listening space is somewhere that you could possibly get help. We are not alone. I am alive today, and I believe this. I'm alive today because people cared, because that youth leader told me she loved me and cared for me. And she showed me that she cared for me. And a light came on. Self-harm is not going to go away. The fact you're here today, that you've come to this, you've given up a Saturday half day to be here, I believe you've opened your mind to this issue. And if you forget, say, if you forget anything, forget everything today, just remember that for you, you are, for some children and young people, you are Jesus. Resources, these are posters from the Department of Education that you can put up in your halls. There's a big feeling, young carers, one about bullying, part of the resources. I'm going to finish. I could talk for longer because I love talking. And certainly I could do that, and I'd love to have had a chance to dialogue with you, to have a conversation, but time does not permit. I would love you, there's going to be a song played in a wee minute when I leave the stage here. It's called Legacy. Watch it and listen. And my prayer is that you and I will be a legacy. We will leave Jesus with the children and young people we meet. Do I have to touch this or anything? No, I think so. Thank you.
Don't mind if you got something nice to say about me. I enjoy an accolade like the rest. And you could take my picture and hang it in a gallery of all the who's, who's, and so and so's that used to be the best at such and such. It world.